Beacon Hill. As he had expected, the roses Castiglione had sent to Vera Griffin had bowled her over.
"It was so sweet of you," she gushed when he called her later in the morning. "Everybody in the office wants to know who my boyfriend is."
Wincing slightly at the word boyfriend, Castiglione said, "Then you'll come to dinner with me this evening." Her face radiating happiness in the tiny screen of his wrist communicator, Griffin replied,
"Sure, where?"
"You pick the place. I'll find it." Now, while the setting sun cast long shadows along Beacon Hill's narrow streets, Castiglione located the restaurant that she had picked for dinner. It was on a corner only a few blocks from the Massachusetts State House. He knew he was early for their date, so he walked up the sloping street to take a look at the golden-domed red-brick building. Even with the marble columns adorning its front, it looked small, pedestrian to his eyes. "It's no Castel Gandolfo," he thought, with an amused shrug. He noticed a statue on the front lawn, a seated woman wearing what appeared to be a very plain dress. Then he saw she was a Quaker. The inscription on the statue's base read, "Mary Dyer, Witness for Religious Freedom, Hanged June 1, 1660. Castiglione blinked at the inscription. "Americans," he thought. "Strange people. Strange sense of humor." He got back to the restaurant just in time to see Griffin hurrying up the street to meet him. He smiled his full wattage at her and offered his arm to lead her into the pathetically unsophisticated eatery. Castiglione suffered through what passed for seafood and listened to Griffin chatter about her arduous day. She did not mention Jordan Kell, and he did not ask about him. He smiled and nodded in the right places, biding his time. After dinner, they took a taxicab to Castiglione's waterfront hotel. At the quiet little piano bar back of the lobby, they had a drink, then went to the elevator bank and up to Castiglione's room.
"What a beautiful view!" she exclaimed, crossing the carpeted floor to look out at the harbor and across the water, the aerospaceport.
He came up behind her and slid his arms around her. "A beautiful view indeed," he said, as he turned her around and kissed her deeply. Later, in bed, the only light coming from the window, Castiglione said very softly, "Vera, I need you to set up a meeting for me with Jordan Kell." She tried to evade the idea, tried to convince him that she didn't know where Kell was, but he persevered. Gently but firmly, and in the end she said,
"I'll try, Rudy. For you."
"That's wonderful," he breathed.
"But I'll be taking a big risk. I could lose my job."
He understood where she was going. "Perhaps I could help you get a job with the World Council's broadcasting department."
"Really?"
"In Barcelona," he said. "It's a much livelier city than Boston."
"Barcelona? Wow."
Castiglione smiled in the darkness. "Once I meet with Kell, I can get rid of this woman. But in the meantime," he pulled her naked body next to his. Just as she had done every morning since arriving at the communications complex, Aditi walked alongside her security escort toward Frankenheimer's laboratory. They never sent the same person twice to walk her through the underground corridors. She knew the layout well enough to go alone, but every morning a young man or woman was waiting for her when she opened her apartment door, always dressed in a gray or darker jacket, a white turtleneck shirt, and navy blue slacks. As she walked, Aditi thought, "Frankenheimer wants a communicator for himself, wants it badly. It's time for me to make a demand for something in return." She knew precisely what she would ask for. Frankenheimer was waiting for her in his lab, all boyish enthusiasm.
"What did your people on New Earth say about producing a communicator for me?" he asked eagerly.
Aditi looked into his soft brown eyes and responded truthfully.
"They don't like the idea of implanting a device in your brain."
"Oh?"
"It would require major surgery. That could be risky."
Frankenheimer nodded.
"Yours was implanted in your brain in infancy."
"In utero," Aditi corrected. "It's a bit late for that in your case."
The physiologist looked crestfallen, but he quickly asked,
"Does the device have to be in my brain? Maybe it could be implanted somewhere else in my body."
"Or it could be completely external, like a wristwatch or a pocket computer."
"You can do that?"
"They can, I believe."
"Okay, great.
But first there's something I'd like you to do for me," Aditi said.
"Sure. What is it?" I want to be reunited with my husband. We've been kept apart long enough.
Spreading his arms in a gesture of helplessness, Frankenheimer bleated, That's out of my area. I don't have anything to do with that.
Then kindly find someone who does, Aditi said, her voice low but iron-hard. I'm not going on with the work you want done until Jordan and I are reunited.